literary stylist like Shakespeare, or a great constructor of plays like Molière, where you have to work with, hopefully, a very brilliant translator, and I've worked with several. In this case, Ranjit Bolt, Indian Englishman, doing the translation of School for Wives. You have to do magic with language so that the magic has the text has that kind of life to it, the vivacity to it. So we see a living person speaking to somebody else, and to speak to that somebody else as though they care desperately that that person understands or falls in love with or wants to murder or whatever the character wants somebody else to do. You have to throw yourself into that as an actor, and this is what we teach the actors. Eli and I do teach the actor to throw themselves totally and wholly, emotionally and bodily and sensorially into that character that you're playing to achieve a result, not a result with the audience, but a result with the other characters in the play and the other imaginary characters in your character's life, which could be God, or it could be Jesus, or it could be your father who died 10 years ago. Or it could be getting water, being able to get this girl to say water and put her hand under it and spend 3 hours in that play by William Gibson, the miracle worker, to get this blind, deaf, mute girl, Helen Keller, to be able to say the word water. You spend 3 hours making that happen, trying to make that happen. You spend all 3 hours trying to make that happen. And when she says in the final scene of the play, wah, wah, and everybody in the audience bursts out in tears, you know the actors have given the life of that role and the life of that character and those characters and presented it. And as what? As entertainment. It's entertainment because it entertains us, and we entertain it. We, the audience, we entertain the ideas of the play, just like you entertain emotion in a meeting. You entertain the audience by having them entertain you. And that interaction, that's what directing is all about. It's always been. When Aeschylus did it with his plays, when Shakespeare and Molière did it with their plays, and when Eli and I do it with ours.
Well, you sound a lot like an acting teacher when you're talking about direction.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So you may not know, but Robert's books on acting are more widely read than any other author on the subject of acting. So more people will read about acting from Robert Cohen's point of view than even Stanislavski, who's really the father of what we consider to be modern acting. So I'm going to ask you a tough question then, that we've never have talked about this before. So this is
okay. This
is one that hasn't come up, and I thought I should have a curveball to throw. What responsibility do you feel, or do you feel, toward those who are reading your books and teaching using your methods and those that are learning? What kind of you must feel a great responsibility to all of these actors, at least in America and overseas as well, that are learning about acting and how to act from your point of view.
Well, that's not a curveball, Eli.
All right, let me go to my next question.
We haven't talked about it. I have to answer that by talking about first about acting professionally. That's the first book I wrote about acting. That's the one that I worked out in the cocktail party with the Penrod Plastino party, and the publisher said, how to get a job. The first chapter of that book, I wrote out of a sense of duty. The first chapter of the book says, you want to be an actor, forget it. You're never going to become an actor. I said, acting is not really a profession. It's more like a club. There are only several hundred people in this country who will make a living as an actor for 10 years in a row. I've had one job in my life. I mean, I've had a lot of subsidiary jobs, but I came to UCI with a contract in 1965, and I still have the contract. And other than having a few promotions, I haven't had to do anything about keeping it. I had to go through the 10-year process. That happened about 4 years. Ever since, I've had the same job. I've had the same job for 43 years. An actor never has a job for more than 6 weeks, 8 weeks. Often the job is for one day. We call them day players. Sometimes we call them under fives. You have under five lines, less than five lines, special contract in Screen Actors Guild for under fives, and you're a day player. You come in the morning, they give you your script at night, you memorize it overnight. How anybody does all this, I don't know. You show up at 5 o'clock in the morning, you slap makeup on you, You go in, the director says, okay, oh, what's your name? They don't even ask you what, they don't care what your name is. Hey, talent, talent, hey, come over here. Okay,
hey, you.
I want you.
You
to stand here. Okay, you got your partner right? And of course you say yes, what are you going to say? And okay, you're ready to do it? I don't think we have time for rehearsal, so this is the guy, this is the woman you're proposing to. So, okay, so give her your lines and you do the scene and say, oh, is that okay? Yeah, it's okay, bye. That's it, you got $148 and you're through. That's the life of most actors when they're working. So I wrote this book with the whole first chapter on, you're never gonna get there, forget it. And then I say, if you haven't thrown this book against the wall by now, okay, you can go on and read the next chapters. Because it'll tell you how people who do get jobs get them. And of course, that's the bulk of the book. But that takes away the responsibility that I felt at that time of anybody coming to me and saying, well, you taught me acting, but I find I can't get a job as an actor. I didn't ever want to have to deal with that. The easy answer is, look, you take a course in political science, that doesn't mean you're going to be a U.S. senator. It's about the same degree of difficulty. You take English 1, that doesn't mean you're going to become a novelist or a poet. But they take acting 1, and they think, okay, now I got an A. I'm an actor. I'll be an actor.
Well, because they're talented.
Yeah.
Nobody else is, but
now,
they are.
I'm going to say that our program at Irvine is reaching is a great program and getting greater every year. This year, we just completed our showcase for our third-year graduate acting students. It's something we created 25 years ago. We do a showcase for our actors in New York, and we do one in Hollywood. When I say one, there are about several production performances in a two-day period in each city. This year, every one of the actors, we only take 8 students a year out of about 800 to 900 applicants in this acting program. Every one of the 8 has an agent, has a manager if they want a manager, and they have casting directors eager to see them. They are going to break into the career of acting. Whether they can sustain a career in acting, we can't say. I would say about half of our students sustain a career where they make a decent living as an actor, usually supported or supplemented by day jobs over a 5 to 10 year period. Some become stars. A few have become, several very recently have starred on Broadway. One actress has starred now in 2 Broadway musicals. She's been the female lead in it. Others are on Broadway right now. On Saturday night, I'm going to see Andrew Simonsky, who's in South Pacific, which is one of the huge hits of the current Broadway season at Lincoln Center. He's in the ensemble, but he's also understudying the role of Lieutenant Cable, which is the young male lead, and he played 3 nights in preview and brought down the house. We have a tremendous program, and it gets better every single year. We have a lot of new, young faculty, and we're thrilled with every one of them. And we have a lot of old faculty, too. And we're Eli's in the middle, so he doesn't have to worry about this a long time. So
that's a great
answer. I feel very responsible to have the program that we have, and I have no, absolutely no second thoughts about it. I'll tell you, say one thing else. Acting is a fantastic thing to do. It's just great. You get to do everything you ever wanted to do. You get to marry the most beautiful person. You get to be heterosexual and homosexual. You get to kill the king and become the king. You get to be the devil. You get to play God if you're in the medieval theater. Professor Schell played the role of God for us in 3 of these productions. And I played Judas Iscariot in one of them. You get wonderful parties. If you become a film actor, you get to go to wonderful locations. You have fantasies of being the governor of California or the president of the United States. It is absolutely a wonderful thing to do, and it's a terrible way to make a living. So, but I go on the first part of it. I don't have any compunction about teaching people acting if that's what they want to study, because they'll enjoy it. I've never had a student. I said, what are you doing these days? Oh, I'm a lawyer. I'm a district attorney. I'm a psychiatrist. I'm a real estate salesman. I have never had a student say, but you know, I really wish I hadn't wasted those 3 years in drama school. They all say, but I learned so much about how to present myself, how to deal with people, how to interact with ideas and aesthetics. They've been invaluable in my job. I was planning on being a lawyer right up until my senior year in college. I totally was expecting to go to Harvard Law School. I'd already pretty much been accepted. I had my interview with Dean Pound, who was the Dean of Admissions. He said, yeah, you should have no problem. And acting and law, it seems to me, are very parallel professions. Lawyers are actors. Politicians are really actors. Hillary Clinton has been attacked, really, for the two big acting problems that we have, not crying convincingly and not laughing convincingly.
She needs to work with you on emotion.
She needs to work with me.
Yeah.
So did Al Gore. I could have taught him
Robert
how to sigh.
Robert could have fixed them in a minute.
We could have taught him how to sigh like a real sigher. Okay.
So only unsuccessful politicians are bad actors, we might say, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Let's shift back to books for a minute. Why, we might ask why you feel compelled to write so many new editions of your books, revisions. And we're on some of these
That's
books.
That's the curveball.
So, okay, so I said it was the next question,
I think Jerry knows that.
Some of them are really are on the eighth edition, and you'd think you would have gotten it right by maybe six. maybe five, but...
Idea books do not get revised. My most important book, I will say, is Acting Power. That's never been revised. It never will be revised. That's the book I wrote on the basis of what I learned through what Greil Frohman led me into. Cognitive dissonance, sociological and psychological theories of Goffman, and performing in everyday life, and the relationship between performing in everyday life and performing on stage, and how they interact with each other and how they differ from each other. That book is a book of ideas, and it's right exactly where it is. I might write a book on my newest research on that, which we'd call Acting Power in the 21st Century, but that's not a revision. That would be an entirely new book. Acting Professionally is a book that has to be rewritten every 5 years. I'm right now finishing up the seventh edition of it. I've taken on a co-author who's James Gallori, one of our former students, who's a casting director in New York, very prominent. Is a book that is totally revised every 5 years because it deals with how casting is done today. This edition is the most revised by far of any because while internet casting has been featured for about 20 years, it never really caught on with the casting directors until about 3 years ago. And the tipping point has been reached, and now everything is done on the internet. So all these books of photos, for years there was a book, 50 years, 60 years, there's a book called The Academy Players Directory, and every actor in Hollywood had his or her picture in it and the kind of roles they wanted to play. I mean, everybody from the biggest stars to the newest actors, you had to be in the union to be in it. And casting directors would come through these book pages. In my last edition, I talked to Gerald Franks, who's the head of the Casting Association of America, said, I look at that book 100 times a day. This year he said, I have it on my shelf, I haven't looked at it in months. It's all on the internet now. So this book is totally revised, at least those sections of it are, and that's about a half of the book. Other books, the theater book is revised every 3 years, and that's because it is, half of it is about current theater. It's about Asian theater, which is classical, but it's also about contemporary Asian theater. But it's about playwriting and playwriting today. There's the largest single chapter is called Theater Today, and that's theater today. That's totally rewritten. Whatever was theater today 3 years ago is not theater today, so that's an entirely new chapter. Techniques and technologies in design are always changing, so those chapters are very severely revised. All the photographs in the book have to be very current, unless they're like a Comédie Française production of a Molière play that's historical in kind. So I replace more than half of the 300 photographs every year. Mm. I get these photographs from photographers in Paris, in London, in Tokyo, in China, and of course all over the United States. I have three photographers that I work with in New York, and two in Los Angeles, one in Minneapolis, and several others in various countries. And then I write directly to the theaters with which I work. And being a play reviewer, I review dozens of plays every year, and I have access to theaters from the press offices of major theaters. And from the designers. I really wanted to get Bob Kelly. Bob Kelly's just, I saw this great storyboards that Bob Crowley, I'm sorry, Bob Crowley designed for a show he did about 5 years ago, and I wrote to him and I said, I don't know you, you don't know me, but I'm the author of this book and I'd love to get this storyboard you have. And he said, well, you know, I don't even know where that is. I'm in New York right now, though, and I've got some new storyboards for Mary Poppins that I'm doing right now. Would you like those? I said, oh, gosh, would I ever? He sent me 50 photos. I said, how much do I need to pay you? He said, no, use them. Be my guest. And so the new book has some pictures of his designs and his storyboard. So these kinds of things are invaluable for a professor of theater because theater is a live art, and I want to teach it in a very live way. The only other book that I have done in additional new editions is Acting One, and that's a textbook for beginning actors. Acting Power was published kind of as a textbook over my objections. It was an idea book. I first tried to get it published as a scholarly book, and I sent it to Chicago Press, and basically they said, you know, you're nobody. I mean, you know, if you were Lawrence, if your name was Lawrence Olivier, we'd publish it, but who cares about a professor's book about acting? And so I finally decided I'd publish it with the book that had published the Acting Professionally book. And they were delighted to do it, but they said they wanted to make it into a textbook. They put some exercises, and I said, okay, because I wanted it published, obviously. But they were disappointed that it wasn't a beginning book. It was too advanced. So I wrote a beginning book. And that I do revise because the theater has changed, and what actors study has changed. I mean, frankly, the first edition, all the scenes were for white actors. I mean, it sounds incredible today, but that was 1982. And, you know, anybody, well, Shakespeare, you know, it's Arthur Miller. You can be a white actor or a black actor. Well, now, of course, we're looking at the Asian repertory, we're looking at Asian American repertory. American actors are looking at the entire spectrum. And this started with the second edition, which was back in the late 80s. So the audience for the books has diversified. The theater itself is vastly diversified. We didn't have that many styles of theater in the American theater in the 1980s. So I was writing about, even though that book is only about contemporary American plays, which are largely realism and largely realistic plays, that whole genre has changed substantially. So it's now in the, really the fourth edition. The fifth edition is only because I've added to it another book called Acting Two, which is about acting in Shakespeare and Chekhov and styles and Oscar Wilde and Greek tragedy and medieval theater. And so that's new. So each case there is something different in the book. That's why.
Great answer. Are there any questions?
Yeah, I think
from the audience.
Coming close to the end too. I don't know what your time is. So give us a
final
cut.
Final question. We're supposed to stop at 6:30 or so. A couple questions. Okay, let's do a couple questions if there are any, and if not, we'll drink wine.
There's one in the back. In the back.
Could you talk about how you came to land?
Yes. Isn't that wonderful? In 1966, Ansel was asked to do a photograph for a book on the university. It's called Fiat Lux. And he was going to photograph all nine campuses. And I think he came to UCI first. And he loved the arts. And I knew who he was because my first wife, we were still married. She was a photographer, so I knew a lot about photography, and he was one of her favorite photographs, so I knew his work very well. And I heard he was coming, and somehow, I don't know, somebody associated us, so he decided to photograph drama first, and he came to me. I was the only professor of drama, really, other than the dean, and we had a designer, too. There was sort of the three of us, but none of us were full-time. I was only three-quarters time, and the designer was only half-time, and the dean was mainly the dean, so not a lot of people to choose from. So he came, and we really hit it off. I said, well, I'm directing a play, Oedipus Tyrannos, this Greek play, redundant translation, and come photograph our rehearsal. We were rehearsing outdoors in the center of Aldrich Park. Lauren and I went out there just before this talk today to a little nostalgia time to go over. We went to the place where that picture was taken. Ansel followed us. He took a whole series of photographs of us. We got on so well that I became his guide for the entire week he was at Irvine. I took him to the physics department and met, you know, everybody I knew, and so I guided him through all the parts of the UCI for a whole week. We corresponded for years later. He wanted me to come up and direct the play in Carmel, where he was living, and he took a whole series of photographs. I never saw the original photographs except those that were published in Fiat Lux, and I'm very, very grateful. Let me just say I'm so unbelievably grateful to Jackie Dooley for creating this exhibition, and to Jerry for hosting it, and Julie, who worked on it, and all the staff for these people. And they found a lot of these photographs. They went to Riverside to get the original print of this, the original negative, to have a print made for this brochure. But that was taken by Ansel, of myself. We had a couple of alumni parties last year, and two of the students who were in that photograph were at the alumni party, Astrid Goblotsky and Julie Cran, who were actresses in my very first show, or in Astrid's case, very first and very second. So that's the story of the Ansel Adams photographs. And they all were glorious, glorious photos. Yeah?
If a student is going to apply to go to an acting school other than Yale, what is your other competition?
Well, don't even say other than Yale. Other than UCI, you mean. Yes, UC San Diego is a very good program, and that's probably the only one that's competitive with us in any of the practical theater fields. I say that with hoping that nobody from competing campuses is in the audience, or I'll hear about it. NYU is traditionally a very, very fine school, North Carolina School for the Arts. University of Evansville, is that the name of it? University
very
of Evansville
good BFA
happens
program.
To be is a BFA program that we get a lot of very fine students coming into our MFA program from. And there are certainly others that I hear about. But you know, it's impossible for us to really evaluate other programs. All we see is the students that come out of those programs, and of course you always hear the gossip. But that's gossip. Gossip is gossip. We know about our program though, and I think we really, I'll tell you this, there are more books on acting that have come out of our program by probably a factor of five than Eli's written three.
Well, yeah, well, that's because
four.
Robert's here.
And Annie Louie's written one, and that's four people just in the area of acting. I'm sure Brian Reynolds will have one out before too long. And so, he doesn't know it yet, but he will. So, we are very well known for our faculty in acting, and in all the other fields as well. We have a great doctoral faculty and a great new design faculty. I say new because they're all new in the last 3 or 4 years and incoming, and we're very, very excited by them in stage management. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lucille. I would say that our founding dean, Clayton Garrison, did dream of exactly this. Clayton was an extremely charismatic man. He was a dancer. He was not a traditional scholar in any way. He was the most glorious looking man I have ever met in my life. And he attracted people of both sexes all over the world. And I don't think anybody ever turned him down when he said, come here and work at Irvine. And he had a vision. He was a visionary dean. And he imagined, he said, what I just said about our program at Irvine, he was saying in 1966. Now, he was crazy.
But good looking.
But, you know, I hate to be like The Secret, that book that I don't have much, but it is a cybernetic book, so I should be behind it. If you project yourself into brilliance, you sometimes get there. And he had that ability to inspire all of us to work 25 hours a day. And so I think that vision was there. And yes, I did expect that we were going to be a great, great school. Why else would I have come here? The same day I was offered the job at Irvine, I was offered a job at Berkeley in their theater department. It paid more. And Berkeley at that time was the number one campus in the US, not the number one public campus. That we now like to say where we are on the list of public schools. No, we were one, Harvard was two, Princeton was three, Yale was four. I may have gotten them wrong in that order, but Berkeley was one, number one in the country. And I chose Irvine, which was just getting started, and because of that vision and a chance to create something that would be outstanding. And we had bad years. The first year that we moved over to the School of the Village, we call it, across the road, away from the Marie Krieger Hall, it wasn't Marie Krieger Hall then. That was a rough year, because we were in, all of a sudden we were in the facilities we always had wanted, big theaters and lots of room and lots of facilities, and we were swamped. We had a lot more students than we knew what to deal with, how to deal with them, and our students were now expecting us to be a lot better than we were, and we were still kind of playing around with things and doing things for the first time, and that was a struggle. We had to re-begin. And in 1980, it happened to be the year that Clayton stepped down as the dean, although it's totally a coincidence, we decided to move into the big time. We decided to move from a two-year graduate program to a three-year graduate program. We hired Keith Fowler to be the head of directing program, and he's still with us. We really forecast the future, and we've been following that forecast really now for 1980. You do the math yourself, 28 years, in our modern, what I call our modern phase. But we've had lots of great moments in the past, except for that one year, we haven't really had any downtime. We've had years of budget cuts. We're facing another one, as everybody on this campus is next year. But that does not make me despair in the least. It's soft water off my back. Not me, it's the vice chairman. So. Nancy. Yes? Yes, it's absolutely true. He said it as though he was the only person in the world doing it. That was the movement of drama departments and arts departments in that time. We were really about the first dance department, I think, that really was about dancing. And theater department was about acting. I remember when I was at Berkeley, if you wanted to act in a play, they finally agreed that you could get one unit of credit for acting the part of Hamlet in Hamlet, as long as you also wrote a 10-page paper about it. And for us, anybody in a play gets units of credit, because that's what we do. That's what our course is about. That was beginning to change in the university, in American drama program, arts field. But he was certainly a leader in that change. Harry.
What is your most proud professional accomplishment?
I'm not going to answer the first one. Like almost any director, it's always the next project. My proudest one is the School for Wives that I'm about to do. And as soon as that's over, it's going to be Endgame that I'm doing in the fall. And then the one after that is Brian's next play that we're going to be doing hopefully all over Europe in 2009. So, you know, you just do not look back. And there are some that are extreme favorites, but every time I name one, something else comes up. And some of the big flops, like Lady in the Dark, is just very, very dear in my heart. Only a flop because Lawrence Krysten in the LA Times said it wasn't any good.
And what did he know?
I just gave him $200 to come and give a speech 3 days ago. So, you know, I'm a forgiving person, you know, because I love that show so much. What was the second part of your question? Yeah, I would love to get my translation of Carmen and Lorna's and my translation of Magic Flute done by a professional opera company. We did both of those shows at UCI. They were great. They were among my fondest shows. But I would love to have a professional company pick up my translation of Carmen. I haven't any idea how to do it because I have no contacts in the opera field. And we did have one production. Biola University did our translation of Magic Flute. That was wonderful, but that was another college production. I just love both of those productions enormously. I would love to direct them, but I would love, most of all, I would like to see those translations done. And I'd love to see a professional theater pick up my Machiavelli play that I did in Los Angeles 2 years ago. It's one of my proudest achievements. It's been done. It's been done in a production in a major theater in Budapest, Hungary. It's been done in Pittsburgh Playhouse and Cal Rep in Long Beach where it was created, but I'd like to see the Mark Taper Theater do it, or the Public Theater in New York, or one of the major American theaters pick it up. So if any of you have any connections,
I'm glad always you working.
I'm
always
glad
working.
You asked that question. Yeah, we all of us in theater have the unfulfilled hope. And that's another thing that keeps us going. Hope to fulfill it.
I think we can end on that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, that was wonderful. And hear your insights and even some early history of the campus. Robert knows, because he's been here before, that it's a tradition in the library to honor our speakers by commemorating the event with a book plate and a book in the library's collections. You don't get the book, we keep the book, but it's doing that.
So.
we threw that out because we have the third. You know, who needs to keep it? It was hard to choose from among many books, but for Robert, we have plated a Your Book Theater by Robert Cohen. And so here is a facsimile of the book plate that will be placed in the book, and we're happy to give that to you.
Oh, thank you, Frank.
And for Eli, for the curveballs you threw, we're plating Baseball in America. Oh, no, that's not right. Plating in your honor, Masking and Unmasked, Four Basic Approaches to Acting. So, and here's
thank
the book.
Thank you.
Students have told us that it has special meaning to them to see book plates, both from our endowed funds as well as for occasions like this, and to have that connection with people who they know about or have had classes with. So I wanted to make another announcement of two major gifts that we've received recently from a longtime supporter. There she is, peeking out. I didn't think you had made it. Longtime supporter of UCI and the libraries, with someone who is with us tonight, Dr. Rosalyn LaDowdy. One of Dr. LaDowdy's gifts established the Hector D. LaDowdy and Carolyn A. LaDowdy Library Endowed Fund in memory of Rosalyn's late father and aunt, and provides unrestricted support at the discretion of the university librarian. The other major gift will name a library space in memory of Hector D. LaDowdy Esquire in either the new law library or in UCI libraries. These generous gifts reflect Rosalyn's commitment to the excellence of the libraries and provide continuing support for student and faculty research for years to come. Some of you may recall that Roz previously named a reading room in the Science Library in honor of her father and mother. And Roz is here with us tonight, and I'm very pleased that I can thank her publicly for her generosity. Roz? So if you've enjoyed tonight's program, I invite you to join our library partners, who helps us sustain the excellence of our collections and services, and particularly of our public programs, such as this one. And we'd welcome your support of the partners or of the Drama Fund to help us support the drama collections for the libraries. Also, before we break, I want to introduce the library's new director of development, Jenny Owning. Jenny? Here, Jenny will be happy to. You'll be seeing more of Jenny, and you can just leave your checks with her on the way out. So we have an exhibit we hope that you will view, and we'll have a reception here. You can't take food out to the exhibit, nor the exhibit in here, come to think of it. But I hope you can figure out a way to do both of those things. And Robert and Eli and Jackie will be on hand to answer your questions. So thanks again for coming. It's a wonderful evening. Thanks very much, Robert. We've enjoyed our association over the years, and pleased to have you here. So thank you very much for coming.